Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to be back with you again. For those of you who were with me this morning from 8 o'clock until 10, apologies, you're stuck with me again until 7 o'clock this evening. Our usual Irish programme live on ERA, and it is nice to be with you. As always, if you would like to get in contact, you can do it either way. You can do it by WhatsApp, and you can send a WhatsApp message to +34 645 996795, or you can send an email to studio@tre.radio, or if you want to really just directed absolutely to me, you can use my own email as well for this program. Indeed, anytime, 24/7, GER @tre.radio. Thanks to Dave looking after you for the last hour. And what a bumper program that was. Now, I must admit, I only caught the last 45 minutes of it because I was watching events in Washington, D.C. But at about 5:15, I said, look, it's never going to happen. I'm not going to be able to see it. So I may as well just go to the studio and get ready. So I was listening to Dave then after that. So Dave is back with you tomorrow. And the good news is, as you heard him say, he's also back with you on Friday between 4 and 6, filling in for GB, Giles Brown. And if Giles is listening, I send you warm wishes and hope you're doing well. Now, what have we got for you on the programme today? Well, Patricia Traynor joins us on occasion. Patricia, originally from Belfast, now living in Rincón de la Victoria, just outside Malaga. And regularly, she and I sit down and we have a little recording session and we do 3 or 4 or 5 stories. And we did it by Zoom the last time because of COVID-19. And in that particular batch that we did, she was telling stories so next or sound like a snitch. She was telling us stories about the lives of people. Like last week we featured C.S. Lewis from Ireland, and today she's going to be telling us about another well-known Irish person. So that's coming up later on in the programme. I'm also going to introduce you again to Manus Walsh. Now, Manus Walsh is an artist. He's based in the Burren in County Clare most of the time, but gets to spend some time in Spain as well. There was a time when he spent a lot of time in Spain, particularly in the Malaga region, when George Campbell would have been alive. And George was a great influence in him. And in fact, George was the person that encouraged him to become a full-time artist. He's also terribly, terribly musical. And my good friend, PJ Curtis, the record producer extraordinaire, sent me a lovely new composition that PJ produced, but was written and played by Manus and others. And rather than trying to introduce you to Manus and explain what he does, I thought, you know what, I couldn't do it justice. And I remembered that I had interviewed him back in 2018. And I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll take a listen to that, take out all the stuff that was relevant only then and play the interview. So I'm going to play, you know, the bones of that interview. So you'll get to have a sense of who Manus Walsh is if you missed that back in 2018. And we'll play that lovely new composition from him as well. We'll have some good, good stories in there as well. Plenty of good Irish music. As I said, Manus is one of those. But we're going to be playing the number one song in Ireland on this day, the 20th of January, back in, when was it, 1965? And I will also be playing for you two tracks from the Pogues, because the Pogues are our featured artists. And in case you don't know, since we moved the programme to Wednesday a couple of weeks ago, I've decided to move things around. And I've suggested that we have a featured artist on the programme every week and let you decide who you would like to have me feature on the programme. And where's my notebook? My notebook is around here somewhere. And that'll tell me exactly who decided that we should feature the Pogues today. And that's exactly what we're going to do. Alan got in touch with us a couple of weeks ago. You can tell me if you would like me to feature a particular artist. They must be Irish, though, for the Irish program. You can WhatsApp the information to me if you'd like at +34 645 99 67 95, or you can send an email ger@tre.radio, whichever suits yourself. So will we get going with the Pogues? Just to kick us off today on the program, I think we should. Here's a song that I'd say Dave would welcome now after such a long program and a hard program and one of those programs where things were breaking regularly. It's a song called Streams of Whiskey. Isn't it? Streams of Whiskey, it's called. And that comes from the Pogues, our featured artist on the programme this evening. And thanks to Alan for suggesting that we play music from the Pogues. Now, it became official today. The streets of Dublin will be quiet this St. Patrick's Day for the second year running, as organisers officially confirmed that there will be no parade in the city on the 17th of March. Now, the story is about Dublin and the St. Patrick's Day parade, because it's always about Dublin, says those of us that don't come from Dublin. But you can be sure that all of the streets in Ireland will be quiet on St. Patrick's Day, because there will be no parades in Ireland. In fact, you probably are aware that myself and Terry McKinley from the Irish Association of Spain would be involved in the organising of the parades in Benalmádena and Torremolinos in Spain. Well, of course, they won't be happening this year either. And of course, we always link in with Dave and the lads in Biddy Mulligan's in La Cala. That probably won't be happening, although you never know. Won't be a parade anyway. But we'll find out closer to the day. And likewise with the lads in Marbella. And we'll find out more about that a little later on. Alrighty. Okay. No, anyway, go back to my story. Right. Now, the festival committee has said that it is re-imaging. Oh, here, a marketing person. Re-imaging celebrations this year by hosting virtual events on SPF TV. All right. So that's obviously St. Patrick's Festival TV, SPF, a new online TV channel. Now, the RTE / SPF virtual parade will provide a fun and safe at-home parade alternative for all the nation to enjoy on March 17th, organiser said in a statement. I suppose they have to say that or they won't get the funding. I'm very bold. I know. Anyway, a rich and dynamic programme of festival events created by hundreds of artists, musicians, performers, makers, creators, arts and live events workers and community organisations across Ireland will run on the St. Patrick's Festival TV online channel over 6 days and nights. Wow, that's a lot, isn't it? Taoiseach Micheál Martin indicated last week that no parades would be happening around the country this March because of COVID-19 pandemic. He said on Friday that there won't be enough people vaccinated to allow festivities to go ahead. He said the one thing that we've learned about the virus is that it changes, it evolves into something different or goes to different phases. Different variations are coming on stream. So clearly vaccinations is the key to this. This year's St. Patrick's Festivals will run from the 12th to the 17th of March with all events running on SPF TV. So there you go. That's the big news. But isn't the big news? The big news is Joe Biden, obviously, and a certain amount of celebration in Ireland as well, because he's been described as the most Irish American president since John F. Kennedy, and he is very proud of his Mayo heritage. And there was talks that he'll be going off to, is it a G20 or a G90 or a G142,604 meeting at some point in June, I think, and he's due to make a stopover in Shannon on his way to the UK. So that'll be his first visit, official visit to Ireland as President of the United States. And we wish him well. Indeed we do. Right, let's take a quick break. Come back to me after that. I will introduce you to Manus Walsh.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. Back in 2018, I told you at the start of the programme, back in 2018, I interviewed Manus Walsh, and the interview happened in his Ballyvaughan home, and that's also where his studio is. And it came about 10 days after he had launched or opened an exhibition in Galway at the Kenny bookstore in Galway. And the name of the exhibition was Variations. All right. And throughout this interview, I spoke to him about his friendship with George Campbell, the times that he spent in Spain and the support that he received, even to this day, from a friend of his going back many years in Malaga called Carlos. And the Carlos he refers to is a man that's called Carlos Perez Torres. And we met him on the program and he spoke to us, in fact, about George Campbell about 18 months ago or thereabouts. I wanted to play the bones of the interview that I did with him to introduce you to Manus Walsh, because after this, I'm going to play for you a new composition from Manus that was produced by our good friend PJ Curtis. So I thought, what better way to introduce that than for you to understand who exactly we're talking about when we mention Manus Walsh. Now, I left the question that I opened the interview with in because it refers to a lady called Rose Hines. And Rose Hines is the chairperson of the Shannon Group, which includes Shannon Airport. She was the person that opened the exhibition about 10 days previous to this. And this is why I left the question in. Rose Hines, when she was doing her opening remarks and when she was talking about Manus Walsh, she said that you'd been in the Burren for 40 years and the Burren had been a huge influence in you, but you too had been a huge influence on the Burren. And indeed, she described Ballyvaughan and the area around Ballyvaughan as a hub for culture. Mm-hmm. And said that Manus Walsh was partly and more than likely hugely responsible for that. What do you think of a remark like that?
Well, it's very complimentary, but I just see myself as working away quite normally in Ballyvaughan, having been here for 42 years. I don't think of myself as that. You know, I'm just a working artist who lives here, basically. So it was very flattering and very nice, but I don't see myself as that, you know, some that would influence culture or whatever.
In relation to the exhibition itself, what does the Variations title refer to?
Well, it covers my career over the various things I've done over them, using various materials, starting with stained glass, then painting solo, going full-time painting back in the 60s on the advice of George Campbell. And then I taught myself enamelling, because we had a craft workshop here in Ballyvaughan, so I was able to do the crafts and work on the spot. And so it's covering the career overall, all the various media, you know.
Okay. Really. And you had pieces there from your time in Spain and from Chile and various other places, but when you decide you're going to do an exhibition, do you set about working for that exhibition exclusively, or are there pieces already that you would have made or painted that you think I'd include those?
Well, I'd always have something going at the time, but it concentrates the mind in that you have a deadline and you have to have a number of pieces. So I'd work towards that, but I'd give myself plenty of time, because it takes a good bit of time to produce a painting or to paint or whatever, and go from there. But overall, I'd start months and months beforehand. You know, this one would, there's so much in it and there's so many different media that it mostly took the whole year. So you'd want to think of that, you know. But it's a question of discipline too. I'm fairly regular in my work practice. I'd go to work in the morning and work for so many hours, and you have to be quite disciplined.
And is it like writing? Do you often stare at a blank canvas and think, what am I going to do? Or do you just start and work from there? Are there times when you need some bit of inspiration, or is it always there?
No, you just get to work straight away with the blank sheet. I wouldn't be staring at it for too long. I'd get stuck into it immediately and hope that it will evolve into something worthwhile. Or many a times I've said, this isn't working. I'm sure most artists are the same with the musician composing or whatever. I go over and over it and maybe even cover the... I've covered an entire painting and started again, you know. So that comes into it as well.
And how did you get into painting? You weren't always a full-time painter, I know, because you mentioned that you came to the Burren over 40 years ago to work in Gregan's Castle. So where did it all come from?
It came from meeting George Campbell in the stained glass when I was an apprentice in the Abbey Studios in Dublin, which is a very well-known, it's still there actually, very well-known stained glass studios. George Campbell came in, he was quite a big name, and he came in as designing it for stained glass, but he knew nothing about the actual craft of stained glass. So myself and George Walsh, who's one of the best stained glass artists in the country, he was no relation, but we helped George out, you know, and I got to know him then and found that he went to Spain and he had this, and I had this thing about flamenco music. I don't know where it came from. So at the end, we got to know him anyway very, very well, and he encouraged me to go solo and gave me my first exhibition, and he gave me a Spanish guitar in appreciation of the help we'd given him, you know, in the stained glass studios. And then I went down with his encouragement. I went down to Spain on the train, completely naive, just landed in the bar, the La Buena Sombra was the bar in Malaga that he frequented, and gathered people around him, you know. So it was a huge learning curve for me.
The more and more I hear about George Campbell and the more people I meet that came into contact with him, he was a very large figure, obviously, and he was hugely influential. As a man, was he very warm? Was he very... did he take people under his wing? How would you describe him?
Oh, yeah, very much so. If he saw any spark of creativity or painting or whatever it might be, he encouraged old and young. And that's how he got to know. That's how I got to know him, really. And wherever he was, he gathered people around him. He was very sociable, loved the old nights out, fantastic music sessions, both in his house and wherever he went. He had a place in Virginia. The minute he got there, he seemed to have gathered musicians around him, you know, and the same in Spain. With, he played flamenco guitar very well.
Wherever I go and talk about George Campbell in Spain, people talk about Armstrong, and they also mention Walsh, you being the Walsh. What did George Campbell give you that helped you so much?
Well, it's a much overused term, but it was like the university. It was like a cliche, really, the university of life. because I was quite naive and came from a middle-class family in Stillorgan in Dublin, and also it was a huge eye-opener for me to go down to Spain and get to know all that, the crowd and Enrique and so on and so forth. You know, there was a big circle of people I got to know, and it was a total eye-opener. And it went from there on. He was very musical, so he had a fantastic collection of records and LPs, and got me into classical music. I was musical already in that I played the piano a bit, and we had a pop group and all that stuff back in the 60s. So it was he gave me a complete broadening of life, really, you know.
Where did he learn all this? I know he was born in Wicklow, moved to Belfast, and then later lived in Dublin. And what influenced him, do you know?
Well, I don't know, really, yeah, to be honest, because he was self-taught as well, yeah, as like myself. And it seemed to be, it just fell into it. And I'm not sure, really, because I never spoke to him about the origins of his work or whatever. I just knew he was there and that he started painting quite young and did all kinds of other jobs in between to keep going. You know, so, and then just he really got stuck into the work. You know, he was a worker in paint. That's his method, you know, just go at it.
At what point in your life did you decide, that's it, I'm done with going out to work every day, I want to have a studio, I want to be a full-time painter? I know you would have been married, had a family. When did you do it? Why did you do it? Was it an easy decision?
Well, no, it wasn't. Again, it was a kind of with the stained glass, from the stained glass and meeting George and his encouragement. It all stemmed from that. And then meeting people like George, or meeting Jerry Dillon and Arthur Armstrong were part of that group, and meeting them and in that circle. And that's encouragement. And just, you know, to get going and to get stuck in. And well, I always did work, various different types of work, because you're very hard to make a living as an artist, particularly in those days. So you did all kinds of other things.
And tell me about Spain. Your love affair with Spain obviously comes about because of the time you spent there with Jerry Dillon and Arthur Armstrong and with George Campbell as well. But how did that develop over the years, and where is it now?
I spent 2 months down there, which, as I said, it was a complete eye-opener to me, a completely different culture. And Malaga in those days was very little tourism around there. And from there on, I went back again 2 years later for another 2 months. And it just seemed to have a connection, which I kept going. Now, when we got married and had kids and so on, time took its toll there, so we didn't have time, you know. But then when they were all grown up and I had more time, I started going back there again. We have a small group of like-minded people. We went cycling in all over Spain as well and other places. But I kept the connection up, and it's kind of deepened since then, you know. So I keep going back.
Where do you draw inspiration from? I know the Burren obviously would be huge inspiration for you, but looking at the paintings at the Kenny Gallery last week, there is a lot more that you get inspired by.
Yeah, well, the Spanish connection again, and all the travels I've done in Spain, and especially around Andalusia. You'll see them here in my little studio here. And also Chile, where I went and stayed for a month or so with friends of mine there, and I fell in love with the Chilean people and the landscape. It's a fascinating country, and especially Valparaiso, which I've done a lot of work on, and that's been an influence. Anywhere I've travelled, really, I've picked up a bit of inspiration, but it's mostly Spain, and the Burren would be the main influence.
Right. And when you're in Spain, what do you like to do? How do you pass your time apart from painting?
Well, I really just transfer my living space to Spain when I go there and live just as I do here. And the minute I get there, I more or less get to work. So it's just a completely different atmosphere, which I love. And the weather, of course, getting away for the dark days of winter here is a great help. And I just work away normally there and meet people I know there and so on and so forth. So I get a loan of a bicycle and cycle around the area and whatever, you know.
Lovely.
And I've stayed in all different places in Andalusia during the winter, in Compota, Salobreña, Almería up in the mountains, and in Malaga itself, in Pedregaleco, which was George's old haunt, Well, in those days, it was a little fishing village, Pedregaleco, just on the east side of Malaga. It's all quite trendy now, but still very nice.
I suppose if you ask an artist this question, it might sound like a daft one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When you say that you're fairly disciplined with your work and you do a day's work in your studio, is it something that you can relax on or relax with, or is there stress involved with it?
Well, there's always a stress of, is the creative thing going to run out? So you're never quite sure till you get well into the painting that this is working or this is going well or whatever. Well, it's a beautiful area and all the family are here as well, so that keeps me occupied, as they say. I like cycling. I used to do a lot of walking because of back problems. I'm not able to walk so much, but I do a lot of cycling and around Spain as well. So that's a hobby. I play music as well, so I play the piano as well and play the organ here for the choir and that kind of thing. That's another part of the creative thing, you know.
Have you ever stood on front of a canvas and started doing something and was working away at it and think, hang on, I've done this before?
Yeah, that's one of the problems. With the burn, to find new inspiration is always a problem. Not a problem, but it's something to be worked at. And challenging is right. Yeah, it's very challenging, actually. It's a challenging landscape because it's almost abstracted already with the stone, with the rocks and whatever, the pavements. But I've gone into quite a lot of coastal work in the recent times, over the recent years. So that adds a new dimension to the work as well, you know. So hopefully I'll keep going anyway and find, hopefully dig out a few more ideas and try new things and so on, you know.
You said you started out doing stained glass and that was where the connection with George Campbell came. And behind me here in your studio, there are two lovely pieces. One of them is one of the stained glass windows that you've done in Galway Cathedral, and one of them is one that's done in the church here in Ballyvaughan. Will you talk to me about those?
Yeah. Well, when I was working in the Abbey Studios, the famous Bishop Brown of Galway was trying to find various artists to do stained glass, to do the designs. And I was picked out for that. I think it was because he was kind of influenced by the fact that my grandfather was very famous in his day, Maurice Walsh, who wrote many, many books and was a big name in his day. He did the Quiet Man, from what the film was made. But it was a short story. So that's where I got that he wanted me to do a design. Bishop Brown wanted me to do a design of the Last Supper, and that's that one there. But there were four others as well, which are up in the clear story of different themes. So there's five altogether. Then there's two stained glass pieces here in the church. One was the Michael Green Memorial, which is window. But Michael Green was a local man who had Highlands Hotel. But then when he got married, himself and Mary Hawkes Green founded the Byrne College of Art, which is that beautiful College of Art, just a couple of miles from the village here. So that was a lovely commission to get, to do a memorial window for Michael. And then just a couple of years ago, just 2 years this coming up this Christmas, I think, the design for the triptych window at the back of the church, which is the new one. And that was based on the encyclical of Pope Francis, Laudato Si, on the environment. So I tried to put in various aspects of the burn, Genesis, the creation, and the environment. So it's all encompassed in that window, hopefully.
Manus, you have a website yourself that gives a little bit of background on who you are and the type of work that you do. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, it's just manuswalsh.com. And various pieces of my work are on that, and the history of my biography and CV and so on. So it's all on that website.
Talk to me about Carlos, because we did speak to Carlos about George Campbell.
Yes.
And he and you were very close in Spain.
Yeah. Well, Carlos has been a fantastic help to me and encouragement to me in Spain. It was through his father, really, Enrique Perez Almeida, who was part of the George Campbell group there. And Carlos would have been very young at that time, but we kept up connections, and he's a great friend, and he's done a wonderful amount of work for me over the years with the exhibitions I've had in Spain and so on, you know. So I keep up that connection. I have a family. I can say I have a family.
In Spain.
Second family in Spain, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you, and it's even been nicer talking to you in the surroundings in which we are, looking at and enjoying your own work. We wish you many more years of creativity, and let's hope it doesn't run out, as you say yourself. And thank you for talking to us, Manus Walsh.
Thanks very much, Ger. Thank you very much.
Isn't that absolutely beautiful? It's called The Road Home, and it was written by Manus Walsh. Manus played the piano on that particular track. It was arranged by Sharon Howie, who also played cello. Flute, the gorgeous flute playing there, was by Quiva Green. It was produced by our good friend PJ Curtis and Malbay Studios, and it was engineered by Martin O'Malley. Absolutely lovely. Thanks to PJ for getting that to me. Much appreciated. It's always nice to get a first play, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And indeed, thank you to Manus for giving me that interview back in 2018. I'm glad I was able to use so much of it again, and it gives you a great sense of who that man is, and I think it allows us to appreciate the beautiful track that we've just heard a little bit more. Alrighty, it is Live on Era. It is the Irish programme. I am Ger Sweeney, and I'm with you through until 7. I hope you can stay with me. If you would like to get in contact with the programme for any reason at all, you can send us a WhatsApp, which is at +34 645 99 67 95, or you can send an email to studio@tre.radio, or you can use my own email if you like, ger@tre.radio. Whichever suits yourself will be absolutely fine and dandy. We have to meet Patricia yet, and we have to play the number one song in Ireland. Actually, that's what we'll do. We'll take a break and come back to me after that. I will play the number one song in Ireland on this day back in 1965.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, Oprah Winfrey is somebody whose opinion matters for millions of fans, and the Oprah magazine recently put Irish literature very much in the spotlight when an article featured 25 books by Irish authors that it suggested you should read. The article by Michelle Darasaw states that as St. Patrick's Day approaches, people around the world will honour Irish culture by throwing parties, virtual or otherwise, she writes, eating traditional dishes like soda bread, really, and reciting their favourite Irish blessings. But Michelle asked Might we suggest celebrating St. Patrick's Day with an O-approved, Oprah-approved, I presume that is, activity, reading books by Irish authors? Ireland is a country with a rich storytelling tradition, the article states. In the modern context, that means that there are endless excellent literary options from the place James Joyce called home. Read about Dublin in the 80s with Roddy Doyle's Barry's Town trilogy, or rural life in the 1960s with Edna O'Brien's Country Girls trilogy. If it's fun books that you're looking for, you're in luck, she says. Maeve Higgins's hilarious essays and Lisa McInerney's debut crime novel are the perfect starts. Or enjoy the work of 21st century Irish authors, including Sally Rooney and Emer McBride. And while you're there, she says, why don't you order all of Tanya French's engrossing mysteries or Maeve Binchy's warm novels? From contemporary classics like Colm Tobin's Brooklyn, which I'm sure many of you have seen as a movie, to the Booker Prize winners like Anna Burns's The Milkman. Here are 25 books, she says, that are lush and captivating as the Emerald Isle, written by some of Ireland's foremost authors. I'm not going to go through the 25 of them for you. We've mentioned some of them. If you want to do it, you could just Google Oprah Winfrey's 25 Irish books to read. And I hope that you enjoy them. Now, 2 years before I was born, in 1965, this song was at number one. It's no stranger to you. We've played it before. And I think I played it last year. I think I did. And when I was going through the various charts from the different years to find an Irish track that was number one on the 20th of January, I found two. And I couldn't actually, I found two, yeah, identified two, but I couldn't find one of them. There was just, I have no copy of it, and I couldn't find any copy of it online either. So I have to play the one that I played last year, but I don't think you'll mind. Number one in Ireland on this day, back in 1965. Of Brendan Boyer as lead singer with the Royal Showband, number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1965. Now, one of the great scenes that we witness on television a couple of times a year is the big ceremonies that are held when new citizens are admitted to Ireland, and a new temporary system to allow people to complete citizenship applications by signing a statutory declaration has been set up. The Department of Justice said that this will provide 4,000 2,000 people with the opportunity to finish their citizenship process by the end of March, which is wonderful news. As in, the in-person ceremonies are not taking place because of COVID-19 restrictions. From Monday, I think it was, or maybe last Friday, a signed statutory declaration can be exchanged for a certificate of naturalisation. This replaces the usual requirement for applicants to attend citizenship ceremonies. Now, if, like me, you wondered what does that word naturalisation means? Well, it's the way in which people from other countries living in Ireland can apply for Irish citizenship. So there we go. That's what it is. Alrighty, I'm going to take a quick break. After that, I shall introduce you to Patricia.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back. Okay, let's go to Patricia. And as you may know, if you are a regular listener, myself and Patricia get together occasionally. We sit down, we record five or six stories, and each one kind of has a theme of its own. And the last time that we sat down together, she said, I'm going to tell you about famous Irish people and just explain to you a little bit about their lives. And I said, sure, that's lovely, Patricia. And last week she told us about C.S. Lewis, which was fascinating. Absolutely. There was so much stuff in that that I didn't know. Lady Gregory, I think, is our topic today, but let's find out for sure from Patricia.
Okay, well, hello, Ger. Here we are again, and this time I'm going to talk to you about a woman called Lady Gregory. Something actually that Ireland should be very proud of is the fact that after Latin and Greek, Irish literature is said to be the oldest in Europe. And today I'm going to talk to you about a lady who decided to dedicate her time and literary talents to preserving that literature and to promoting the cause of Irish nationalism. Now, she travelled around the country collecting and preserving ancient stories of Irish heroes and myths and putting them in writing for future generations. Wonderful stories, such as those of Fionn Mac Cumhail and Cuchulainn and the tales of the Fianna, which had been passed on orally from one generation to another. It's thanks to her that we have saved these stories for future generations. She wrote them in Irish and also translated them into English. But who was Lady Gregory? Well, she was born as Isabella Augusta Perse in Roxburgh House in County Galway in 1852. She was the daughter of an Anglo-Irish gentry family of landowners and politicians. Her family had settled in Galway in the 17th century, and Isabella had married Sir William Gregory in 1879. He was a rich man and the owner of a grand mansion called Cool Park, which was surrounded by forests, rivers, and beautiful lakes. Her husband died 10 years after their marriage, and it was then that Lady Gregory began researching Irish history, and as a result, she shifted her political position from soft unionism to being a strong supporter of Irish nationalism. She decided to dedicate her time and literary talents to promoting the cause of Irish nationalism. She wanted to collect and translate those traditional tales and legends of Cuchulainn and the stories of the Fianna, many of which she had heard as a child from her maid, Mary Sheridan, who was a Catholic and a native Irish speaker. It was she who introduced Lady Gregory to the history and legends of the local area. When Lady Gregory first met the poet William Butler Yeats in 1896, when he was on a trip to the west of Ireland with Arthur Symonds, she invited both men to lunch. From then on, Yeats and Lady Gregory struck up a friendship which was to last for 30 years. He admired her inner strength and enthusiasm, and she became a great friend, advisor, and confidant. Also, the fact that she knew Irish and Yeats didn't gave her another reason why he was very interested in keeping up with Lady Gregory. They were both committed to the Irish literary revival. Now, also, Yeats, I think, was a bit of a snob, and he loved the grand mansion full of art and tradition, and he enjoyed losing himself in the magnificent grounds of Cool Park. He loved the green forests and the glittering lakes and could almost breathe in the sublime peace of Ireland. From then on, he spent all his summers and winters, too, in the company of Lady Gregory in the Cool Park estate. The fact is, the estate really belonged to Lady Gregory's son, Robert Gregory. His father had left it to Robert in his will, but his mother was looking after the estate until her son came of age. Robert was not very interested in the estate and spent a lot of his time abroad. He was fine with his mother living in Coole Park, but Robert and his wife were not at all happy with Yates spending so much time there, although they didn't say anything to Lady Gregory, as they didn't want to offend her. But they resented Yates and actually asked him to start bringing his own wine whenever he came to Coole Park. Yates was clearly aware of the fact that Robert and his wife couldn't stand his being there so often. But Yates ignored them and turned a blind eye to the situation. Yates spoke to Lady Gregory about the difficulties he was having to get theatres to put on his plays, and said he dreamt of having a theatre which would specialise in Irish plays. Lady Gregory agreed, but said that the theatre would have to be in Ireland and not in London. She offered to raise funds to promote the works of both Edward Martin and Yeats in a theatre in Dublin. And so began the Irish Literary Theatre, which later changed its name to the Abbey Theatre. They wrote letters to all those who were tired of seeing Ireland falsely depicted in the theatres as caricatures, as stage Irishmen to be poked fun at. The theatre's first production was Yeats' play, The Countess Kathleen, on the 8th of May, 1899. Lady Gregory and Yeats remained great friends until she died. She supported him and gave him her backing to fulfil his dreams, and even helped by typing out his works and suggesting words when his mind became blocked or he needed to know how country people spoke. She helped the people who worked on the land and had learned a lot about the thoughts, beliefs and customs of the people in the west of Ireland. Yates recognised that Lady Gregory had a special literary talent, and he encouraged her to redact those stories of fairies and mythical heroes and to write a book on Irish mythology. The fact is, she was a prolific writer, and many of her plays were put on stage in the Irish Literary Theatre. In fact, she wrote more than 40 plays, if I remember right. Together with Yates, they wrote the play Kathleen ni Houlihan, which starred Maud Gonne in the lead role. Her contribution to the preserving the traditions and ancient stories of Ireland is incalculable. She was a dramatist, a collector of folklore, a writer of sonnets, an essayist, a translator, and a visionary. She was, in every sense, a true patriot with a great passion for her country, and she played a pivotal role in the founding of that famous Abbey Theatre. Yates depended so much on Lady Gregory that when news came to him that she had taken ill and was near death, he replied that she had been more than a mother or father or friend and had been the only person in the world to whom he could tell his every thought. Lady Gregory had not only been a patroness of Yeats, she had also helped many literary friends. She died on the 22nd of May, 1932, aged 80. Coole Park House was demolished in 1941, and Coole Park Estate has been taken over by the Forestry Commission. But on a tree in what were the grounds of that house, you can still see the carved initials of great literary figures such as Synge, A.E., Yeats and his brother Jack, George Moore, Sean O'Casey, Catherine Tynan, Violet Martin and George Bernard Shaw, who is reported to have once said that Lady Gregory was the greatest living Irish woman.
The peaceful early morn, he stirred the souls of psychos and the men who had the horn, and they all looked very happy in the morning. But Jimmy didn't like his place in this world of ours, where the other man brought storm and his ex and he had 30 pairs. So I sad to see the grieving of the people that I'm leaving, and he took the rod with God knows in the morning. We walked him to the station in the rain, we kissed him as we put him on the train, and we sang him a song that ties long gone. Oh, we knew that we'd be seeing him again. Sad to say, I must be on my way, so buy me beer and whiskey, cause I'm going far away. I'd like to think I'll be returning when I can, to the greatest little boozer and to Sally McLennan. The years went by and twice the change, I grew to be a man. I learned to love the virtues of Sir Sally McLennan. I took the cheers and drank the beers and crawled back home at dawn. I ended up a barman in the morning. I prayed the pump and took the hump and wore the whiskey down. I took the booze and horses to the men and drank them brown. I heard the say that Jimmy's making money far away, and some people left for heaven without warning.
to the station in the rain. We kissed him as we put him on the train, and we sang them a song of times long gone, though we knew that we'd be seeing them again. Sad to say, I must be on my way to buy me beer and whiskey, cause I'm going far away. I'd like to think I'll be returning when I can to the greatest little boozer out of Sally McLennan. When Jimmy came back home, he was surprised that they were gone. He asked me all the details of the train that they went on. Some people may have scared the crowd, but Jimmy drank until he choked. Took the road for heaven in the morning. We walked him to the station in the rain, and we kissed him as we put him on the train, and we sang him a song for times long gone, though we knew that we'd be seeing him again. Sad to say, I must be on my way, so buy me beer and whiskey, cause I'm going far away. I'd like to think I'll be returning when I can to the greatest little boozer and to Sally McLennan.
Second and final track from our featured artists on the programme today, The Pogues and Sally McLennan. And thanks very much to Alan for recommending that we feature The Pogues. If you would like me to feature a particular Irish artist or band or group for yourself, please do let me know. You can send an email, it's the handiest at this stage, ger@tre.radio. Simple as that. Let's do a quick break. Come back to me just after that, please, and we'll see what else I can conjure up for you between now and the top of the hour.
This is TRE.
Oh, you're very tall, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
you're tall, aren't
you? Yeah, well.
All that buffet was lovely, Bill.
I know. I almost went back for thirds.
Back to your place for a naughty night camp, then.
You bet. Just wait till I get this car started.
Car insurance from Linea Directa starts from just €194 and comes with 24-hour roadside recovery. Call Linea Directa on 902-123-616. That's 902-123-616. T's and C's apply.
Talk Radio Europe.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back. We're into the final part of the programme. Now, the bad news department. I've just received notification that the Department of Health has been notified here in Ireland of 61 more COVID-related deaths and 2,488 further cases. The number of people with the virus in ICU is 210, up eight since yesterday. And bearing in mind that the country has a bed capacity in ICU of 285, we're climbing there. I know that they have what they call a spillover, or whatever the term they use for it, that they can get to about 305 or 310. But 210 right now is certainly a figure that we need to be watching very carefully. Speaking of COVID, speaking of the pandemic, Irish people are smoking more since the beginning of the pandemic, according to a new study. According to the research, which was conducted by Mary Keating Foundation, the majority of smokers have been smoking more cigarettes per day than they did at the beginning of the pandemic. Of those who smoke, 44% said that they are smoking at least 6 to 10 more cigarettes per day. Ouch. While as many as 13% say that the number of cigarettes that they smoke each day has increased by as many as 20 or more. How can they afford it? That's the question I always ask. Anyway, as well as increased smoking habits, the study also found that more people are binging on alcohol and junk food. Okay, this is where they shut me up. While one quarter of all adults claimed that they are drinking the same amount as they were before the pandemic, 1 in 8 people said that they are drinking more now than they were before. A lot of home drinking going on. I saw something online one day where somebody said, if the pubs don't open soon, I'll be an alcoholic. So that'll give you an idea of where we're at. All right, that is it. That's all I have got time for you for today, unfortunately. The hour does whiz by, doesn't it? Can I say a big thank you to Manus Walsh and to PJ Curtis, because PJ sent me the Manus Walsh composition, and that's why I brought back the interview, or the bones of the interview that I did with Manus back in 2018. Thank you to Patricia Trainer as well for her lovely story about Lady Gregory. Thanks to Alan for suggesting that we feature the Pogues on the programme. I'm not sure who we're featuring next week, but in the back of my mind I have an idea that the Wolf Tones had been suggested, and if that is the case, I'll have to check. If that is the case, I will probably feature the Wolf Tones. Alright, and I can't remember who that was, but anyway, that's alright. I'm back again in the morning. for Daybreak between 8 and 10 because Hannah is out all of this week, so I'm filling in for her. Before I go, as always, can I say a big thank you to our good old friend Jose Antonio Sierra, who is our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor on the programme. And Jose Antonio, if you're listening, I will be in touch. I know I've promised to give you a shout last week and I just didn't get to it, but I certainly will in the very near future. I think we have a repeat of one of Hannah's book shows coming up just after the news at 7 o'clock. As I said, I'm back with you tomorrow between 8 and 11. Thank you so much for your company. Do join me again tomorrow morning between 8 and 10 if you can. If not, next Wednesday between 6 and 7 for Live on Air. Bye-bye and thank you.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.